Welcome to season two of the Good Market Podcast. I'm your host, Harry Cunningham. Each month, we hear from good people with great products, supporting exceptional causes, and making incredible impacts on communities around the world. Join us now as we hear another good story about impact that's happening right near you. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Good Market Podcast. Super exciting episode for me today, and one that's very close to my heart as well. We're going to talk a lot about mental health. And joining me today, I have Jake Lavin, the founder of Happiness Project, a brand that you probably know and love from Good Market, one of our founding partners, and also David Jackson, head of schools at Canterbury School in Fort Wayne. Jake, David, both of you, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, Harry. Pleasure to be with you.
Morning, Harry. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, you got. It's fun to talk to you guys because I know you both obviously well, and it's like we feel it's sort of a formal time here. But know that we're just going to have a good conversation. I'm excited to dig in. So, Jake, I want to kind of jump right in with you, and you have a pretty interesting story, and one that I think is important and needs to be told about youth and mental health. And you started your company, you know, when you were in your teens still. So, can you go ahead and give us a little bit of background on you and how you started the company?
Yeah, for sure. So the company was started when I was a junior in high school. So this is back in 2017. And it started because a classmate of ours, he took his own life due to his mental health. His name was Nick Spade. And I remember walking around the halls the next day at school and nobody was saying anything. Nobody was really talking about it. And it was kind of just this really awkward tension in the air. And everybody knew what happened. But everybody was kind of scared to talk about it because there was that stigma around mental health. And there still is a stigma around mental health right now. But imagine back in 2017 what that was like and even years prior. So I was really confused by that. And I was like, dang, like there's probably so many kids my age in my high school and the high schools around us that are going through the same exact things that Nick was going through, but aren't saying anything or aren't talking about it simply because they're scared to talk about it. They're nervous. They might think they're judged. If they're a guy, they might have those standards of, oh, man up. And we're like, no, 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 you need to speak up. So I was like, okay, what's a fun way to start a conversation around mental health? We've all had the people come into our classrooms and kind of give us the spiel, but it doesn't really make it intriguing. It kind of actually makes you a little more reserved, depending on how it's done. Obviously, there's really great people out there doing stuff. But back when I was in high school, that's what it was like for me. So I was like, dang, I want to do something that's fun, that's inviting, that's really aimed at the youth and the high school kids, college-aged kids, to get them to start talking. So I was like, I want to start a clothing company. I've always wanted to do that. Everyone wears clothes, fun colors, bright colors, and let's make it just super inclusive for everybody. And on top of that, let's donate money to raise awareness for mental health. So I started going door to door with my friends and myself just doing this. We're in the backyard tie-dyeing hoodies and posting on Instagram. We have a little stick figure and we named him after Nick Spade. So his name is Nick. And he does a lot of like positivity all over our Instagram and TikTok and other social media platforms. And he is spreading a message to the youth that it's okay to talk about your mental health. The struggle isn't forever and that there is hope. So we really narrow in on those three things. And on top of that, offering a lot of like mental health resources to the younger kids who might not be getting it in school. And our hope for the future is to be totally getting people talking about mental health and also getting the schools to start talking about it a lot, because that's where it started for me, where these schools, my school wasn't really talking about or saying anything. And that really hurt me. So David, I'm really excited to hear more about what you're doing, because that's so needed in the younger generation with the youth. But yeah, going back to the story, we've been doing it for about 5 years now, and we started in my partner's basement, and we're moving into a warehouse pretty soon to house all the merchandise, to have a little office space. So that's super exciting, and we're in Good Market, which is so awesome. We're so excited to be in Good Market, and yeah, we've just been doing everything online since, and it's pretty unbelievable the impact that we've seen made on just by doing stuff on the internet. It's really cool.
cool. Very cool. So, David, over to you for a minute. Obviously, pretty interesting and inspiring story to hear about a 17-year-old that sort of thought, how can I do something? But as an educator yourself and somebody that's been impacted by mental health personally, like I have been, you know, what's going on today? What are you seeing as an educator today with youth, obviously post-pandemic, before pandemic, so forth? So I'd love to jump into that a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, so many things. You know, mental health and awareness around it has become so much greater a part of the conversation that we're having as educators, even from when I first became a teacher 20 years ago. When I became a school administrator, you know, immediately, you know, every year would have a number of students who were falling onto the radar, you know, with certain challenges and things like suicidal ideation. And so schools have really started to put in robust plans around mental health. You know, Jake talked about his experience of losing a classmate, and we had a similar occurrence here at Canterbury this year, and it was a traumatic event. And so what do you do as a school leader in those moments? Those are really challenging. And so, you know, I go to our crisis action plan, which every school has. What do you do in the advent of a crisis? And reviewing it, you know, the steps were, well, don't call the students together in any type of assembly to talk about it. And I read that and said, oh, no, that we can't do that. We have to bring the students together. So the Monday morning after, we brought the students together and we talked. And the students want to talk. You know, they want avenues. They want to be educated. We've recently partnered with Parkview Health here in Fort Wayne to implement a program called Sources of Strength, which is really a training program for faculty and students. And it's important that we walk into the building every day with the mental health of our students at the forefront, because they are feeling an enormous amount of pressure over everything from how they're doing academically to their personal identity to finding themselves in the world. And I told our students earlier this year, I said, know that you are loved unconditionally for who you are. And I think that's the message that we have to continue to spread to our youth, that no matter what, we love you unconditionally, and you have value and you are loved. So there are a lot of programmatic things that we're working to implement, parent education, and we can never do enough. More counseling services, all of those things are part of a broader array of initiatives that schools need to implement in order to ensure that the kids are supported and loved every day.
Yeah. And I think, David, I hope that what you're doing is setting some great, you know, kind of bar, raising some bars for what other schools can follow. Jay, curious to you, like, now that you've kind of heard David talk about what they're doing, what was going on in your school at the time? You know, you said that nobody was really talking about it, but how has that changed? And I don't know if you've been around them much lately, but how has that changed from then? Because I get the sense that from 2017 to 2022, 2023, you know, obviously looking forward, there's a lot more awareness. And I think if we can think about the pandemic that we all went through, there are silver linings to that pandemic. And this mental health awareness may very well be one of those silver linings. But when you hear David talk about what they're doing, what are you seeing? What are you hearing?
Yeah, so I actually definitely should get an update from my high school. But last I heard was that they implemented mental health days for students, so that if a student he woke up that day and just was not feeling good, he was allowed one of the days off just to take care of himself, take care of herself, their mental health. So I think that's a huge step in the right direction, kind of normalizing it and like really integrating it into the calendar almost of like, hey, this is okay. And you can take time off for that. So that was a huge thing. I heard about that. And then I have also, I think with time going on, I think the conversation at the school has just become a lot more normal. I know, especially in my high school, because a lot of the people in the area have heard of the brand, know the brand. So they're wearing it in the hallways and at school, which has been super cool. I've heard so many conversations have been started about mental health, and it's almost a really normal thing to talk about at school. So it's really cool that the schools are doing something. And then also it's really awesome to hear that our merchandise is actually making like an impact in our school, starting conversations, normalizing it, and making it not this weird thing to talk about.
Yeah. David, we were talking earlier about the idea of final exams. And Jake, I know on your social media, you guys just posted two pictures of the Earth that looked identical, and it said what the Earth looks like before final exams, what the Earth looks like after final exams. That, and I know there's a lot of pressure, and this time, this sort of final exam time, could be just one more thing. So, David, when you guys think about final exams, even how does something like that impact students, and how do you think about, to Jake's point, normalizing the days?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, in our environment, we're a college prep school. And so balancing that need to, you know, prep the students for what they're going to encounter at the college level, make sure they're ready, but also taking into account, you know, their mental health and well-being. So I'll give you an example of something that happened this past week, which I think is indicative of some of the strides that we're making. So over this past week, we've had a number of students out with mostly flu and really bad. I mean, we had about 60 of our high school students out over the course of the past week. And, you know, they're studying for exams and they're wrapping up projects and things like that. And so we said, you know, for the students who've been out, we're just going to freeze them. You know, they're not going to have to worry about anything they had to do this week. We're just going to have them focus on their exams. We've come up with flexible schedules for them. We're going to be proctoring some exams into the next week after the break. And we've said, if you don't feel well and you're not ready, like, that's okay. You know, do what you need to do to be ready, and we'll work with you. Our high school director will be here pretty much all next week, you know, kids in and out. So I think schools can do a lot to support the students. I love that idea of mental health days. If you think in the professional world, you know, people generally get personal days for things, right? And you get to take those. Students don't have that opportunity, you know? So I love that idea of a mental health day, because we all need that. You know, we all get to that point where we're like, all right, I just need to take a day and regroup here, because when we get to the point where our buckets are empty, that's where things start to really go wrong. So I think the more we can recognize that, and the more we can destigmatize it and move out of that traditional, you know, we're grinding and grinding and grinding and grinding. And we see that in so many industries. Doesn't mean we don't work hard, right? It doesn't mean that we're not achieving at a high level, but it means that we are taking our mental health seriously, and that we're coming up with plans to make sure that every student can achieve success, even when you have those, you know, those moments of I'm just overwhelmed, right? I say all the time, you know, we have high expectations for our students, but we also have to have high support. Those two things go hand in hand. So, yeah, I think there's a roadmap for schools to start thinking differently, for teachers and administrators to start doing things differently that can still prep the kids and get, you know, deliver a great education, but also have understanding for where they are in their lives and what they need the most.
Yeah. And I love that you're able to do that. And obviously you're leading a private school, but my hope is that there are public schools out there that, you know, are following these kind of public school standards. Make the break. Is it time to change the standards? Jake, I don't know if your school was a public school or a private school, but this idea that you can actually think differently versus thinking everything needs to be the same all the time is a really powerful one. And I think that's a great approach that you're taking. Jake, I want to dig into age a little bit, because I was talking with some people earlier about when is too early. And we've all heard horror stories about kids that are in the single digits of their age, you know, ending their lives. And you think about mental health is a challenge as a young one. I lost my dad when I was 8 to suicide. And I didn't, you know, it wasn't even something that was discussed back then. But when you think about age, you were 17. This was something that was impacting a fellow, a classmate of yours. What age is too young? What age is the right age? Is there a right age? When you think about that, like, you were smart enough at 17 to know that kids need to be talking about it. But what if you had been 13? And I really want to hear from both of you on this, but Jake, just I'll start with you on that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that no age is too early to be talking about mental health, your feelings, and what you're going through. I think it's crazy that I was 17, and really I always kind of heard about suicide as this topic that was talked about very rarely, but never have I thought that it would impact my life the way that it did and the way that it impacted the people around me so much. And I definitely did not get educated about it when I was younger, or really hear about it. It was kind of, oh, that's the thing we don't really talk about. It doesn't really happen around here. So I can just imagine the impact that it would make if it was in kindergarten classes with picture books, talking to the kids. Because even in that age, you're making new friends, you're going through new experiences. Stuff might get stressful, even as a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that if we could start as young as possible, just normalizing the simple conversation of, hey, if you're going through something, don't be afraid to talk about or to say something. Because we can't have people going to age 17 like myself and roughly knowing the topic of suicide and mental health. And I've heard it from my friends and my brother's friends of like, dang, dude, I really thought like depression was fake until you guys started posting about it and talking about it. I had no idea any of this stuff even was a real thing. So I think a lot of people maybe not are ignorant to it. They're just uneducated on it. And we need to start educating.
Yeah, to Jake's point, Harry, I think, you know, educating at a young age is important. I think there are some developmentally appropriate ways to scaffold it, you know, so mm-hmm. with a kindergartner or first grader, second, even into third and fourth grade, you want to talk about the idea of reaching out for help, you know, when you're feeling upset or you're feeling hurt or angry, and those emotions for small children can manifest in a variety of ways, right? So normalizing the idea of seeking out help. I think when you get into the middle school ages, you can start to broach that conversation about, you know, start using the word suicide, because at that point, you know, they have a little bit more awareness about what it is. And there's a developmental difference between a fifth and sixth grader and a seventh and eighth grader. I'm just thinking about it from a school perspective and some of the mm-hmm. conversations that we're having, because we're actually going to be working on this. And we have partnered with some behavioral specialists at Parkview who are going to come in and do some presentations for parents and also for students. And so we're working on putting together some scaffolding that we feel like is developmentally appropriate. But I agree with Jake. You know, you find ways to broach those conversations even at a young age, and it'll look different, you know, for children under 10 than it will for children over 10. But I think it's important that schools take that approach and start to develop common vocabulary around what it means to reach out for help, and as they get older, what it means to to have somebody take their own life and the trauma that creates, and how we prevent it, and how we ultimately hope to make everyone feel loved and acknowledged so that they, you know, won't undergo that tragedy.
I think one thing that's been interesting for me carrying the Happiness Project sweatshirts at Good Market is that we get a large younger population that comes in and wants them, and their parents are buying them for them, right? Maybe they do, maybe they don't have their own money, but the parents are buying them. And maybe the parents know the story and maybe the parents don't, right? At the end of the day, the more Happiness Project we can see, the smiley face we can see, obviously that's just bringing more awareness. But it gives me a moment of pause, because I think, David, you touched on something about parents. The importance of educating parents is as important as educating youth, in my opinion. However, youth are much more receptive, would be my guess, than parents may be. So, David, what are some things that you guys do, or how do you think about approaching this conversation, arguably a sensitive one, with parents, and even parents that might say, well, that's not my kid, but it very well could be their kid?
Exactly. You know, I think that at the end of the day, every parent wants their child to be safe and loved. And I think approaching it from that standpoint, when we're talking to parents, and we've had this experience, you know, what we say is, it's important that you talk to your child and that you ask them, you know, are you doing okay? Have you thought about this? And that's something that can happen in the home. But I do think that, you know, when we implement programs at school, and this is beyond just talking about mental health and suicide prevention, it is important that our parents have education and buy-in, and that we're partnering with them because they have an enormous role to play as well. You know, the schools are most effective when the partnership with parents is strong, and it's strongest when we're doing outreach and education. So that is a critical piece of it.
Yeah. Jake, curious, tap into you on that. I've had the opportunity to meet your parents. What did they think when you said, hey, I'm going to make these sweatshirts and bring more awareness to mental health? Is it something you guys were already talking about? Was mental health a topic in your home? Or were they just like, okay, another one of Jake's crazy ideas? Like, what was that moment like? And what was that? Like, what was the tone in your home at that time?
Yeah, they were all for it. I mean, we've had mental health in our family, some issues in the past. And so it's been a conversation going around in my family for a long time at this point. I've gone through stuff. My intermediate family has gone through stuff. And so has some of my cousins, aunts, and uncles as well. So it wasn't this like super weird conversation to introduce into the house. If anything, it brought more light to it, which was a really beautiful thing, being able to just be so vulnerable during hard seasons of life and just really helping each other out and having that like clear check-in with each other. Although when we were tie-dyeing in the backyard and bleaching hoodies, my dad was not happy because all the grass died in the backyard. So very happy about the mental health topic, very unhappy about the dead grass in the backyard, but I think one outweighs the other for sure. But it is interesting that we're talking about the subject of parents, because I think the number one message that we get of people seeking help or saying, hey, my parents don't believe me. My parents don't think I have depression. My parents think it's fake. My parents are telling me to man up and all these things. And it's really hard to help that person because you need to really go directly to the parents. So it's so awesome that you guys are doing that, David.
Well, and Jake, I will say that's a challenge for schools too, because we have, you know, in every role that I've been in my school life, you know, there have been some parents who say, no, this is not a mental health challenge. This is effort. This is, you know, you're not living up to your responsibilities. And so sometimes kids come in and say, yes, you know, my parents are putting tremendous pressure on me and they don't believe me and they won't listen to me. And that's a crunch for schools, you know, because obviously that puts you into a little bit of an oppositional framework with the parents. So what do we do in those situations? Well, we try to create a cocoon around the student and initiate several layers of support, whether that's administrators, counselors, advisors. We have a lot of mechanisms that we can utilize there.
We lost David for a minute. He'll be back.
And then we
sure
do outreach to
Jake,
the parents.
Jake, while you're hearing about that idea really of creating that cocoon around students, I think that's the kind of support. And David, well, I think you're back now. You were talking about the cocoon around students. So we lost a little bit. I want you to jump back up there. But that idea of cocoon around students, jump on that real quick, and then Jake, I'll come back.
Yeah. So we do a lot of that with administrators, with advisors, with counselors. With teachers, just making sure that the adults in the life of the student are aware and they're supportive.
That idea of those multiple layers is what's probably so important and so great to hear. And I think, Jake, when you think about your friend Nick, and you guys were close, but what do you think was missing? When what should we learn from that outside of the powerful statement that you have about kind of reducing the stigma, bringing more awareness? What do you think was missing there that might have helped him based on what you knew at the time?
I think he was getting help. I know that. And he was seeing therapists, and I'm a little fuzzy on this. I'll have to talk with his parents about this, but I really think that having those outside resources, whether that's your parents or a therapist or a doctor, being able to talk to them, I think it's also so important to talk to peers about what you're going through and your friends, because they can really understand and relate to you on such like a personal and deeper level, and you might even open up to them more than other people in your life. So I think having the support from your friends around you is so important. And for all we know, he could have been just scared to talk about that with his friends. And if people are more vulnerable in that scenario, then your friends are going to support you and be there for you if the stigma is down.
Yeah. I think that word that you said, vulnerable, is so key in this conversation. Like the ability to be vulnerable is okay. And it's sort of the opposite of everything that you said about man up or just do what just suck it up, get through it. It's okay to be vulnerable. We're all vulnerable. If we were diagnosed with cancer today, we'd be vulnerable. If we were diagnosed with heart disease today, we'd be vulnerable. It's really no different than the vulnerability level for all those. Yeah.
Well, Harry, if I can seize on that point briefly, I think that's something that we're trying to do more education on at the school level, right? So if a student breaks their right arm at practice, we know that they can't come in and write a full essay in class the next day, right? But with mental health, it's not as readily visible. So we have to continue to send the message that it's no different than, having a physical injury. And we need to put things in place to ensure that as students are struggling, that we're supporting them academically, just like we would with a broken arm, accommodating them to know that they can't write their essay in class. So that's something that schools can do right away.
Cool. I want to ask you guys both this question, interesting one. And I love, David, your reference about the broken arm. That's something that's visible. Mental health isn't always visible. And when I lost my dad, he was 33. I've heard countless times, but he was always happy. So how do you, and this question for both of you, and either one of you can jump in first, how do you combat that outer image with what's actually going on inside?
I think you mentioned the word vulnerable, Harry, and I think being vulnerable is a soft skill that we should lean into with our youth, to say to them, it's important that when you're even professionally in the workplace, right, and relating to other human beings, that's an asset in your toolkit, and really a 21st century skill that will help you in so many ways. So I think just continuing to chip away at that idea that we have to present a happy image all of the time, and that it's okay to let your guard down and have moments of vulnerability, that will actually help you in life. And it's something that's important for you to do, not only for your mental health, but also for, your career and your relationships. And it's part of being just an overall healthy person. I think that's an important avenue that we can pursue.
Yeah. Jake, thoughts on outer shell versus inner actuality?
Yeah, David, that's so good. I think you hit exactly what I was going to say. And I think the way that we do it and work with Happiness Project is, if one of us is having a bad day, we'll kind of start out the day. Hey guys, I woke up super tired today. Or hey, I woke up, I'm just feeling off today. So if you could just support me in that, that'd be great. And I think the same thing can go with like friends. Like, hey guys, I'm like just feeling super weird today, but I'm like happy to be here, happy to be hanging around with you guys. And I think that'll totally shift the dynamic for people giving you that love that you might need in that scenario. Maybe that might open it up into deeper conversation. But if you go into those scenarios without saying anything, people are never going to know. So how are they going to be able to help you or even really recognize it, except maybe saying, oh, that guy, he was like, really, like, is he mad at me? Or like, is he? And I think it just leaves a lot of question marks up in the air for that person of being like, wait, no, actually he's not mad at me. He's just going through some tough times right now. And we don't want the question marks. We hate the question marks.
I love that. We don't want the question marks. That's great. Jake, obviously a little bit about the sketching and the line drawings. And I think there's an interesting approach that you made with that. In my opinion, this is purely my perception. It has not, it's not founded in anything other than the simplistic nature of what you do sort of strips all of this down to the kind of the bare bones of it. Like it starts very simply. And so I don't know if that was intentional or not, but any thoughts around that? I mean, you and I haven't talked about that before, but I think that's part of what makes it easy.
Yeah. 100%. That was definitely very intentional from the start. It was drawn from the idea that when people would talk about these serious subjects, it was like these, it's funny because like the more I get into typing, the more like this, I don't even know if this will make sense to anybody, But like you look at some fonts and you're like, oh my gosh, that's like a scary font. Like that font's like yelling at me. You're like, oh gosh, like that poster is kind of yelling at me. And I didn't want that. I wanted to make it really safe and feel like you can almost just like sit in there and just like feel comfortable. And so like the hand-drawn nature of it almost looks like it's drawn by like a young kid, is what like all of our fonts are across the board. And having that simple smiley face instead of some, I don't even know what you would replace that with, but we just wanted to make it so inviting and comfortable. And I think when you make stuff inviting and comfortable, that breaks down barriers for a lot of people to make it feel a lot more normal. So 100% intentional, and just that childlike feeling of everybody's welcome, everybody's invited.
David, as an educator, you know, somebody that spends 100% of their time, well, not 100%, but their working time all around kids, thoughts on that and thoughts on how you, I mean, you and I both have sweatshirts with Happiness Project on them, but
yep.
Any thoughts on that? Anything you'd like to add on that?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, Jake is exactly right in what he's saying about everyone feeling included. The word that we've attempted to focus on is belonging, and the sense that when every child walks through the doors of the schoolhouse, they feel like they belong, like they are this, like they are part of the school, like they are part of a family, that there are not just one but multiple adults in their lives that are trusted, that they have friends in place. And you might think, well, the school doesn't really have a role to play in, you know, arranging friendships between students, and not that we really actively do that, but when we see that there are potential struggles, we partner with parents to try and make suggestions. Because, and I'll never forget this, my first boss, who was the middle school director at a school called Oak Hall School in Gainesville, Florida, her name was Susan Harper. She was a very traditional Southern lady from Alabama, and so she loved Alabama football. And I remember asking her one day, you know, and everybody called her Mrs. Harper. You didn't call her Susan. Mrs. Harper, why is it, and I was a first-year teacher, why is it that all of the middle school students have to sit in their advisory groups? Like, we mandate that, why can't they have, like, free seating and sit with whomever they want? And she said, yeah, I know that sounds prescriptive, David, but one of the reasons we do that is the worst thing in the world is for a middle school child to arrive at school in the morning and feel like they don't have any friends and like they don't belong. So schools can do things to create systems of belonging, and it's critical that every student feels like they have a sense of belonging. And then sometimes those things are manufactured. But when we see that it's out of balance, we've got to act, and we've got to partner with parents and teachers to really create an individualized program for kids when they're feeling like they don't belong.
David, I love that. And, you know, we say at Good Market, you belong here, because we believe everybody belongs as well. Whether you're here or not, you should be here. And the idea that you belong here is a great one. And my hope is that there are educators that might hear this podcast and hear you talk about that, creating that sense of belonging, that will change the way that they act today. And I think, you know, Jake, obviously your goal was to make changes in the world. David, I love that your goal is to make changes in the world too. David, quickly, You perhaps are more focused on mental health because you've been impacted by it personally as well, suicide as well. How do you think that changed you? And that came at a later point in your life, but how do you think that changed your perception pre-post?
Yeah. So my father committed suicide when I was 22. I was a first year teacher. And I think it, you know, it provided me with, you know, just a really close connection to the trauma that ensues in a family and in a community when that happens. But I'll never forget this. When I came back to school, I was out for a couple of days, and I came back and I walked into my classroom, and there was this giant card from all of my students who had signed it. And I just remember thinking to myself, wow, what a beautiful thing it is to, you know, come to school every day. I wouldn't even say come to work every day, right? Come to school every day, because it doesn't feel like work. And I think since that moment, I've always had a sense of, you know, how compassionate kids can be and how important it is for us to be able to have these conversations with them. And there have been times with, you know, I don't share a lot of personal things with students because there's, you know, there's got to be a line, right, that you that you have with your students, and there have to be boundaries. But there have been times where I know I've had students who have been affected by suicide, and it's been an opportunity to open up and to be a little vulnerable, and it's helped them. You know, I'm not a counselor, I don't have a counseling degree, but in my role as a school leader, I'm often kind of a mentor in chief to a lot of kids who will find their way into my office and just, you know, sit down and ask questions. And so it's really helped me, I think, be a better educator, be more empathetic. And it's helped me, I think, in this particular moment at Canterbury, to understand and have a sense of what our school community needs in order to heal and process.
That's great. One of the things that I'm fortunate to get to do is every time I talk to somebody that I have on the podcast, I learn that there is a purpose that drew them to what they're doing today. And I think, Jake, obviously you were impacted when you were in high school. David, you were impacted when you were a first-year teacher. We've all managed to find the silver linings of those moments, those very traumatic moments. And I think that it's important, and I'm excited for us to share this story, that there are silver linings to bad things that happen, and hopefully those silver linings can help future bad things not happen. So, you know, with that, Jake, any last thoughts around kind of where the future is for Happiness Project? I know you're doing some speaking now. Your Instagram is filled with positivity, but any thoughts on kind of where you're going from here?
Yeah, for sure. I think we definitely want to step. We've been doing digital for a very long time. So I know that, Harry, you've gave us a few opportunities to talk at some high schools. That's going to be so exciting. But we're really focusing on connecting with high schools, talking at high schools, and just like introducing it to the youth more in person, because that leaves such a lasting memory. And you never know what kid in the crowd is really thinking, thinking about their mental health on such a deep level. So we're really excited for that. And yeah, we're just going to continue to chug along and continue to break the stigma on mental health online with the clothes. And we're just so excited for everything in the future right now.
Great. And then David, you, any thoughts about where the future lies for students? What's happening? How that world will keep changing?
Yeah, I'll just throw a couple of words out. You know, we've mentioned the word belonging. I'll say hope. I'm very hopeful that schools can start to make real substantive changes in how we support students, in how we grow our capacity for talking about mental health, for how we can put policies and systems in place of support so that we can move forward and create that sense of community. And ultimately, we want to forestall tragic events, and we want kids to know that they're loved and valued for who they are. And I think we can get there. We can get there. We can get the mental health piece right, and we can still challenge kids academically and do all of those things that schools do. So I'm really hopeful for the future. And by the way, the kids are leading this. The kids are telling us that this is needed, and they're doing it more so than they were just 10 years ago. I'll tell a brief anecdote. I was on a bus ride maybe 5-6 years ago. We were coming back from a Latin competition, and one of my best students turned over to me and she said, Mr. J, because that's what a lot of the kids would call me, and she said, why are so many of my classmates talking about killing themselves? And for me, that was a wow moment because, you know, you have this really, you know, driven, successful on the outside teenager, but on the inside, she's hurting and her classmates are hurting. And we've got to listen to them when they tell us those things. So they're leading this. They're leading this effort. They're speaking to us, and we've got to listen and we've got to help them. But I'm hopeful and I'm optimistic for what schools can do in the future.
So, David, Jake, one of the things that I heard you talk a lot about was letting the youth guide us. And I love that. And I love that direction, that kind of hope for the future that can be guided by the youth and us as older people. And Jake, I think I said, you know, one day you'll be an older guy like me. And I hope that the foundation that you all are starting by listening and starting with our youth is one that is really built onto the future. So I think you guys had some great conversations today and I loved it. I hope you enjoyed it as well. David, Jake, thank you for taking the time today. Let's hope that what we're doing is making some differences and changes in lives.
Thank you, Harry. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Good Market Podcast. A new episode will drop the second Tuesday of each month, so make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening. Give us a like, a follow, and a share, and please leave a review so that we can reach even more people and grow even more good. Tune in next time to hear more stories from good people with great products supporting exceptional causes. We'll see you next month.